Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Kavita Hui. Turkey has ignored U.S. sanctions and world condemnation and has pressed on with its assault on northern Syria. Syrian forces were greeted by the Kurds, who were once aligned with the U.S., as they came to the rescue of a possible genocide. In this edition of the debate, we will ask whether Syrian forces and Turkish soldiers are on a collision course and what this risky incursion by Turkey means for its relations with the U.S., Russia, Iran, and even the world. Well, before that, let's get an update from Press TV's Zahra Al-Durzi, who is in Aleppo. Well, Zahra, what is the latest that you have based on the movements by both the Turkish forces and Syrian forces? Zahra Al-Durzi.
Yes. The Syrian army deployed today in the strategic city in Manbij in Aleppo, eastern northern countryside. The significant importance of the city that it links the city of Aleppo with the northern of the Syrian territories, and also it is located on a Kara-Kozak bridge that links between the city of Aleppo and the eastern of the Euphrates. The deployment of this Syrian army today came after days of talks between the Kurdish YPG, or the self-administration, and the Syrian government, brokered by Russia, to deploy the Syrian army in along the Syrian-Turkey border to prevent and stop the Turkish aggression in Syrian territories. And also the Syrian army deployed in Al-Tabqa and the Al-Tabqa air base and the outskirts of Raqqa, and also Qamishli on Syria-Turkey border, and also Hasaka. The deployment of the Syrian army will maybe it is expected to stop the Turkish aggression, because the Turkish president promised to take control of the Syria-Turkey border under the pretext of fighting the YPG, or the Kurdish YPG, that are considered as a terrorist for the Turkish. Now the Syrian army is the only one that is able to protect the Syrian territories and the Syrian country and the Syrian people. We had recently, like in half an hour, an information that there are talks will be held on Saturday between a delegation from the Kurdish YPG and the Syrian government in the capital, Damascus. A delegation from the YPG will be heading to Damascus from Al-Qamishli in northern of the country.
Very well. We'll be looking forward to that. Thank you very much, Zahra Al-Durzi, of course, one there in Aleppo. Let's introduce our guest for this edition of the debate. Independent researcher and journalist Janice Kortkamp joins us from Leesburg. Senior analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus in Williams joins us from New York. I'd like to welcome you both. Janice Kortkamp, let me start with you. This has been 1 week of this operation by Turkey, a rather risky operation that they have taken, not in their eyes perhaps, into northern Syria, try to create a buffer zone or maybe a safe zone, whatever you'd like to call it. How do you see this operation so far?
Well, it's a very complex situation, and we're getting news literally by the minute, so things are changing rapidly on the ground, and things are probably changing as we speak. Turkey their objective is not to have a safe zone. Their objective has been to annex a great deal of Syrian land over the course of this regime change attempt by the U.S. and its allies. And so, you know, under the pretext of their, quoting, fighting terrorism, they actually have been aiding and supporting and abetting terrorist groups within Syria. And we're seeing now the primarily Turkish-backed Free Syrian Army is committing all kinds of atrocities, and I just saw them marching with an ISIS flag alongside of them, or a Al-Qaeda flag, excuse me. So what we have is a government that has been supporting terrorists in Syria claiming to be fighting terrorists by creating this so-called safe zone. Really, what they're doing is trying to play their hand that they have. And because of the Syrian army, their rapid deployment to the area, the agreement between the U.S. and Russia in Manjib, this seems to be putting pressure on Turkey to show them that everybody means business here and that this is not an acceptable situation. So I'm hoping, you know, we're all hoping for rationality here, but Erdogan is not known for that. He's more known for unpredictability and aggression. So we will see.
Well, at this point, Ian Williams, we're looking at how the latest is that Russia has made an announcement that the Syrian government forces have actually taken control of this northern Kurdish city of Manbij, including the nearby settlements, to fend off this Turkish offensive. What does that signify, this development, that you now have the Kurds who are lined up with the Syrian government, and, of course, how that could put them on a collision course with Turkey and its soldiers?
Look, what we're looking at is a sort of daisy chain of people stabbing each other in the back, the leaders. There's not one person speaking the truth here. Erdogan, Trump gave Erdogan a green light to go into Syria. He took the troops away. If he didn't know, he's even more stupid than he looks. If he thought that by removing the U.S. troops, the sort of thin green line, that Turkey was signaling quite clearly what it was going to do. And Trump thought that they could get away with it and he could get away with it. As it is, Trump is meeting tremendous kickback from within the U.S. military because they're well aware that the Kurds were their allies and they've been betrayed frequently from Iraq through to Syria by the U.S. They were betrayed at the time of the first operation against Iraq when they were incited to revolt and then left dangling in the wind for Saddam Hussein to come after them. It's also a test of the Kurdish leadership, because if they believe in American promises after all of this, they really seriously need replacing. They withdrew troops from the Turkish border on the say-so of the U.S. Look what happened. The Syrians aren't coming in to protect anyone. They're coming in to regain control in their usual bloodthirsty manner, the Syrian government, that is. The Turks are showing complete indiscriminate behavior. They're shelling cities again. Their surrogate allies, as your previous correspondent pointed out, is busily being filmed shooting civilians and politicians on the street, defenseless prisoners curled up on the ground, being shot at point-blank range. And this is the word that's going out. I mean, the effect here is that the world, the reputation of Erdogan is dead in NATO and Europe. Nobody's going to reach out to help him in any way. The U.S., I don't think they're going to impose serious sanctions, unless, of course, there is more popular outrage than usual in the U.S. Over the outrageous behavior. And by the way, that might be possible, because I think people discount the effect of military opinion on U.S. opinion. And the U.S. military, by all reports, is livid about this betrayal of their allies, as they see it. And what can we go? They've let in the Russians, who part of American policy there wasn't to look after the Kurds, it was to keep the Russians out. The Russians are now in there. The Syrians are now in there. So Trump and Erdogan between them have just really ripped up 7 years of policy and thrown it to one side. And one group of people here, the ordinary Syrians and Kurds, they are suffering like hell for all of this Levantine chicanery.
Well, Janice Kurtkamp, let me ask you something here, because this is it's kind of confusing. We're looking at the U.S., and you mentioned that the U.S. did give, or Donald Trump did give, the a green light to Turkey to attack these SDF forces. Is that the case? Because then how does it turn around and then impose these sanctions on Turkey and at the same time condemn it for what it's doing? But we do know the warning that Trump did send out prior to this, saying that if Turkey goes outside of its boundaries in terms of humanitarian reasons, then it will let him have it, destroy its economy, was what Donald Trump said. So did the U.S. give the green light for Turkey to go ahead with this?
Well, it's hard to know for sure. Many analysts are saying that, but we have to go back to the basics. The U.S. coalition is in Syria's land, 100% illegally. And they couldn't care less if the Kurds die, or the Assyrians that are up there, or the Turkmeni, or the Bedouin, or anybody else that's up there. The Kurds, of course, are not the overwhelming majority. They only make up 30% of the population there, but you only hear the word about the Kurds. So the U.S. is there occupying a third of Syria's land illegally, and it is something that the Syrian people have despised, and the Syrian government, of course, does not want, and that just so happens to be where many of Syria's richest oil fields are. And this is what we're really seeing, is the U.S. was never there. You know, you don't fight ISIS and lose six soldiers. You know, Syria was hemorrhaging soldiers in their actual battles against ISIS. They are there to prohibit Syria from accessing and having its own oil. So this is really what the U.S. has done. And Trump's decision to pull out, even though, yes, it's created a difficult situation and there will be violence and many, you know, people killed, and it will be hard. But this is the first step of what had to happen for this war to finally come to an end.
Ian Williams, if you recall, when the U.S. Was in Syria claiming that it's fighting the Daesh terrorists, there was a time years ago when that claim was made. Russia came into the picture, and all of a sudden we saw lots of these Daesh terrorists get killed. And of course, the Syrian government forces came out with the Russian support. And then you had Iran in its advisory role, and you had Hezbollah, who also came in. Trying to understand then what the U.S. was doing, what was its end game by staying inside Syria all this time, if it was going to turn its back on the SDF forces that it was supporting?
Well, that's one of the problems. Is I honestly don't think they have an end game. I think Trump hasn't even been told there's oil in Syria. We're talking about reflexive actions and ill-considered actions with no long-term strategy. You know, the Syrian government countenanced and supported some of those Islamic terrorist groups to counter the more secular opposition. Everybody there has been behaving, double-dealing, and stabbing everybody else in the back in terms of political leaderships, almost without exception. And the U.S. is no exception. The U.S. went in there, remember, because there was also a revolt, an ISIS core in Iraq spilling over from Syria. They went in. They were pulled in because there was lots of international sympathy for, well, let's say, humanitarian concerns. That might be the U.S.'s reason, but it was one of the stated reasons, and it was responding to public opinion that, you know, we cannot put up with this. There was the hordes of refugees pouring across the border, destabilizing Europe. There are loads of people with lots of interest in it, but I return to the main point. At the bottom of this, very few people were considering the interests of ordinary Syrians or Kurds. They were the last thing on the mind. Everybody knows that Turkey and Erdogan actually started off making conciliatory moves towards the Kurds, but then he regressed into the more traditional Turkish posture of repressing them and having a reflexive animus against them. And he transferred the hatred for the PKK inside Turkey to the YPG in Syria. And, you know, the Syrian Kurds are sort of supportive but kept their distance from the PKK because they realized what the consequences would be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at every level, there's been a mess of miscalculations, people all looking after their own interests, none of them sitting back and thinking, what can we do to stabilize this? What can we do to look after the people who we're all officially representing? They've been engaged in this reflexive knifing in the back with each other and the double dealing. I mean, there's been deals cooked up between Russia and the Americans. While the Americans were pretending horror and shame at what the Russians were doing in terms of air raids on civilian encampments, they were at the same time condoning and tacitly condoning and coordinating with them. So, you know, there's just stunning, breathtaking, cynical, bloodthirsty hypocrisy at every level.
Well, Janice Kortkamp, Donald Trump has said, let him fight it out. It's their war. The U.S. needs to protect its own borders from refugees. Enough of these endless wars, as he calls it. But what is being analyzed based on what is happening is that it's said that as the U.S. is withdrawing, Assad and Putin are emerging as the winners in Syria, not to mention Iran, who are all allies in this equation. Do you take the U.S. for its word, the U.S. meaning the U.S. presidents, that they're actually pulling out of this region, and this is one of the steps that's being taken?
Well, Donald Trump is getting a lot of pushback, and he's getting the pushback from the usual suspects, which are the pro-Israel, Israel first, last, and always warmongers in the swamp and in the U.S. media. And this is, you know, from Bill Kristol to Lindsey Graham and all of these other gang, you have these people that have been furthering Israel's plans in the region. And I would say that there has definitely been an end game, and this is an end game that has been planned since the 1990s, when the neocons created the a clean break project for literally destroying, you know, weakening Iraq and weakening Syria, and then eventually attacking Iran to basically reduce any resistance to Israel's plans in the region. And this works very well along with the U.S. Typical military-industrial complex thinking of needing wars to justify its own existence. After the obvious, you know, the pattern that we have here of the destruction of Iraq, the destruction of Libya, the attempted destruction of Syria. This was started in the mid-2000s, by the way, under George W. Bush. We have clear evidence from government documents proving that we were trying to undermine the Syrian government there. So the plan A was to create a puppet government in Syria. When that failed, plan B was to balkanize or separate it into small, weaker states. And this is the plan. Finally, Donald Trump, and I am not a fan of the man, but he is finally trying to hopefully stop this blitzkrieg, basically, the U.S. has been engaging in the Middle East. And this is why he's getting so much blowback. It's not because these people care about the Kurds or they care about the normal Syrian people. And one advantage I have, perhaps, over your other guest is having spent considerable time on the ground in several trips throughout the war in Syria. And I can guarantee you that the people cheer when the Syrian army enters an area, and the places that have been liberated by the Syrian army and are under the Syrian government, civilization is there, hundreds of thousands, actually over 1 million people have returned to their homes, and, you know, rebuilding is going on. So Syrians need to be in charge of Syria, and this is what we're seeing and what the people there want to see.
Well, Ian Williams, it's very hard to see how Turkey is going to settle the situation. We're looking at this point, I believe a week to 10 days into this operation. What are they going to try to do? They want to get rid of what they call terrorists, of which these are the SDF forces. They're looking, aside from the backlash that they're receiving internationally, the civilian deaths that are mounting. Also, you're looking at some of the Turkish soldiers who have been accused of war crimes based on the most recent report of an execution that took place that has gone viral. This is not looking pretty for them. And to obtain the intended goal that they want, it just doesn't look like they can that's going to be achievable unless they get some kind of cooperation from the Syrian government on this.
Look, we've got to get rid of some of this binary thinking. Item one, Syria has not attacked Israel in any way since 1973. It has guaranteed a safe border for them. Syria was already a puppet state. It was torturing people on behalf of the CIA from Abu Ghraib. It was a contract torturer. That's how far away the US was. It trusted Saddam, it trusted al-Assad to do torturing on its behalf. Then we have the other complication in this otherwise simplistic binary solution. The Israelis have consistently supported the Kurds as a means of splitting up Syria. So now the Israelis, the Turks, the Americans, all of them are reneging on their allies, their erstwhile patrons and clients. And this is actually beginning to have some effect on public opinion. People have noticed that for 100 years, the Kurds have been denied the statehood that was promised to them after World War One, whether it was a good thing or not, it was promised, it was denied. They have been let swing in the wind with Saddam Hussein. Then they had the ISIS people come in afterwards. people have betrayed the Kurds consistently, but they've also betrayed all of those other minority groups in there. And, you know, I have to say that the Kurds were rather, the Kurds were not viscerally anti-Assad or anti-Damascus, because traditionally, to some extent, the Syrians had gone lightly on the Kurds compared with the Turks, because the Assad regime, heavily embedded in a minority itself, sedulously cultivated most of the minorities, like along with the Alawis themselves. You also had the Christians and the others, the Yazidis, who the regime cultivated, because a precarious regime like that wants all the friends it can get. And, you know, I'm sorry, but as for the Syrians, look, if I were in a town and the Syrian army turned up, I'd cheer, because I'd be scared of the consequences if I didn't. And you went there in Syria as a guest of the Syrian government in an area where no independent journalists were allowed to travel. I think that should speak eloquently about your objectivity.
So don't assume that you know anything about my travels. Do not assume that. I'm not an idiot.
Okay, well, you smuggled your way under the barbed wire at the border in teeth of the Syrian refusal to grant independent foreign journalist visas.
Yes, that's because foreign journalists have gone with an agenda and have done nothing but lie. Anyone who goes in legally through the Syrian process is told, if you see something good, say it. If you see something bad, say it. Just please tell the truth. That's what everybody is told.
They've definitely worked out what they're going to say.
That goes in with an actual visa.
Okay, unfortunately, we're first.
You have no actual experience on the ground during the war, and I do. And I'm telling you that you do not understand the situation. I'm sorry, it's nothing personal.
Not been invited by the Syrian government for some time as a guest.
I was never invited. I was granted a visa, and this is very difficult to get. But many hundreds of people from Europe and America have actually gone during the war.
Very well, we're going to end it there. We're fresh out of time. Thank you very much for that. Independent researcher and journalist Janice Kortkamp from Leesburg. Thank you, Ian Williams, senior advisor at Foreign Policy in Focus. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. Your questions and comments are always welcome. Newsroom at presstv.ir. Do stay with us. International news is coming up in a few minutes' time. It's bye-bye for now.